I confidently admit my errors before someone else exaggerates them. This is Dr. Herbert L. Barley with the Thought for Today. And I am at the University of Healing here in Campo, California, where the sun is bright and it's a beautiful day. I confidently admit my errors before someone else exaggerates them. Can we all say that for ourselves? It's quite something to be aware of our own errors, which we always are, and then to admit them before someone else exaggerates them. That's quite something, because most of the time we are trying to hide them. We're trying to hide our errors. We pretend we didn't make them. We pretend that they're not real or that they're not important and so forth, whereas they really are very important. And the reason that they're very important is because we want to hide them. If we didn't want to hide them, it would be of no consequence, be of no account. But since we want to hide them, then it's of consequence. What kind of errors would we have that we wouldn't want to admit? We have errors that we say that we are limited. Now, I was listening to a speaker, and the speaker was telling about the success of their organization, which was quite wonderful. And the speaker was an outstanding speaker, a dynamic speaker, forceful. But in the speaker's presentation were a number of errors. Not terribly bad errors, but just errors. The one error was, I know that I know that I know. And then at another point in her talk, she said, I don't want to know. I don't want to know about cars, for instance. I don't want to know how they run. I just want to know, put my key in and make it work. You see, one moment she says, I know that I know that I know. And the next moment she says, I don't want to know. I mean, that is an inconsistency that's going to destroy. Another time, when we're talking about our own organization, we had to be consistent about it. And she was mentioning that her organization grew and beautifully grew, and it is true, it grew fantastically. But then she said she had to have a 4,500 seating room, and then another two or three paragraphs down the line, she says, and our 3,500 seating room, you know, it's not important. It's picky, real picky stuff. But if we're going to present ourselves, we have to be careful of our errors. Our errors will destroy us. People will think that we are unreliable people, that what we have to say is not worth listening to, because one minute we say this and the next minute we say that. And when we are inconsistent, we are treading on very dangerous ground. And I know I have to watch that constantly too, because I look at everything through rosy glasses.
Magnifying glass.
And magnifying glass, yes. That's because you're the recipient of the magnifying glass look. But what I do is I have eyes in the back of my head, and I have a memory that never stops, even though I say, who said that? You know, like yesterday I was asking, who was the speaker? You know, who was the speaker? Paul Harvey was the speaker. And all the world knows Paul Harvey. But I wanted to bring these things out of the audience. Now, I could just blithely speak out and say all sorts of lovely things and be a complete program in itself. But in all of my sharing, in all of my catalyzing, I like to be a catalyzer. I like to bring things out of other people. And so oftentimes I ask in my lectures, in my talk, now, what was that? Who said that? And that's like the teacher saying, how much is 2 times 2? And teacher, don't you know how much 2 times 2 is? You know, and of course the teacher does, but the teacher is attempting to get the student to say, what are you doing about your errors? Do you have any errors? If you recognize that you always speak the truth and you're always consistent with yourself, you don't have to worry about errors. Errors are only for people who cannot make up their mind. One minute they say one thing and the next minute they say another. And you know who are the biggest error makers? They are the people who want to get other people to like them. And so one minute they'll say, I'm against war. And the next minute they'll say, I'm for war. Now, Paul Harvey is a radio commentator at 84, and he has a $10 million yearly contract to continue going into his 90s. And at one point, he was very much in favor of war. He was a hawk. He said, war is good, you know, this war is good and that war is good, you know. And then he had an awakening within himself, and he came to the realization that any war is not good. We support our nation doing whatever it does, but war per se is not good, is not something I recommend, is not something I support. And he did a complete flip, and people thought, my God, he's inconsistent. Well, in that respect, he was not inconsistent. He merely changed his mind. And he said he changed his mind. He said, I used to think this way, and now I think that way. And this is how we sometimes are. We say, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this, I'm going to do this. And then we tell everybody we're going to do it, with a silly thing to do too. But then we change our mind, we're not going to do it. And we say, how do I tell everybody I'm not going to do it? Like, for instance, you're going to get married. And you're, yeah. You thought you were on the line. But no, you're going to get married. So you tell everybody, I'm engaged to the most wonderful man. I'm engaged to the most beautiful girl. Oh, we're just soulmates for this and that and the other thing. And then somebody else comes along, or they talk with each other and find out that they're really not soulmates. They really don't agree with each other. They each have a different point of view about life. And that's okay. That's acceptable, you know. But then they have to go and tell all their friends that they're no longer engaged, that they're no longer going to get married. And everybody was, you know, singing up a wedding, you know. The bells are ringing for me and my gal. And the birds are singing for me and my gal. And one day, and you see, everybody was expecting the wedding. And it didn't happen. So, really, you should have friends. And you should have relationships with friends and people in your life. But not possession. The minute you get possession and you decide to change your relationship, the whole world says, oh my gosh, you know, what happened to them? What did he do, or what did she do, or what did they do, or something like that? And that's not the point that you want to have. And it's not an error. It is an error to go out and tell the world something that's not yet consummated, but it's a human error. It's a human error. Ellen was asking me this morning, she said, it's tough to be born a Christ child and then to forget it. It's tough to be born a Christ child and forget it. And she says, I know I was born a Christ child. Now, how can she say that? Well, to heal is to return to our original purity and integrity. Well, the Christ child is our original purity and integrity. So if we can return to what we were born as to our reality, then that's who we were. We were the Christ child. Now, when did we take off the mantle of the Christ child and put on the mantle of the human being? Now, that's not bad, but it's silly. It's just like saying, I'm going to pretend that I'm poor. I'm going to pretend that I haven't got any money. I'm going to pretend that I cannot do the things I want to do. And it's silly, because mentally you cannot pretend that. You may pretend it all you like, but you cannot pretend it. J. Paul Getty's grandson, I told you the story before, he said, I'm going to not do anything with my grandpa's money. I'm just going to go and prove myself to myself. So he goes off and he gets himself a job and he does things. He travels the world and he thinks that he is, you know, doing it on his own, that he's a macho boy, you know, accomplishing what he wants to accomplish. However, he made one fatal mistake, many of them, but one of them, he didn't change his name. He had the name Getty. Oh, you're Getty? Oh, you must have money. Oh, you know, and that just goes with the name. And so wherever he went, he never had to pay for anything because, you're Getty, you know, we want your love, your goodwill. Oh, the Getty grandson was here in our restaurant, you know. Ooh, how wonderful, you know. And George Washington slept here, you know, that sort of thing. And then, because he has always been a wealthy boy, No matter where he went, he acted like a wealthy boy. He could not act like a poor child. He did not know how. He saw a movie, he pretended he was poor, but his quality always came through. Now, that didn't mean he was better than somebody else. It merely means that's the way he was trained. Everyone else can be trained that same way and enjoy that same thing. But they let these errors slip in. The error of thinking that they're not divine. The error of thinking that they're not whole and perfect. The error of thinking that they're not, they have no possibility of returning to their original purity and integrity. They have no possibility. That's an error of thinking. And that's a tough thinking too. Now, what are you doing? Are you doing something like that to yourself? If you're doing something like that to yourself, I say, stop, start over again, basta, you know. And can you do that?
Si.
I find it so charming, the stories that are coming back to us about Ingeborg, who has gone to visit her husband in Italy. Ingeborg is a senior citizen and a very fine lady, and she went back to Trieste to be a blessing to her husband, who was having a few problems. And she flew back, and she visited him, but she didn't stay there. She did what she should with him. And then she went out to see all her old friends that she used to know in Trieste 30 years ago. And many of them remembered her. And they all had to show their children's wedding pictures and the grandchildren and all that sort of stuff. And Ingeborg just soaked it up and just, but she was acting like a dowager, you know. As though, yes, I have come to bless your family, and I've come to do this, and she does it, and she does it, and it's not always acceptable in every party, but where she is, it was acceptable because she's not the prodigal daughter returned, but she is the beloved child returned, and people always thought, oh, Ingeborg, how can you put up with that man? He's this, that, and the other thing, and Ingeborg says, I love him, you know. And they respected that. They respected that. Even though the marriage was a rocky marriage for a little while at the end. And you see, she didn't admit to the errors at the time. But now she admits to the errors and she says, well, I like him. He's just fine. You know, he's doing his thing. I do my thing and I'm happy doing it. And she can release it. And now people cannot make exaggerated statements about them, because Ingeborg has done her thing and he's done his. But be yourself. You see, this divinity that's within you, this this J. Paul Getty grandson that's within you, is your calling card in life. It's your divinity. It's your magic. It's a wonder of who you are. If you can handle that, if you can handle who you are. Now, I keep telling all of our students and all of our friends, who's your father? Who's your father? And everybody starts telling me about their father's faults. And you say, oh, no, I tell you about his good. No, you don't. You tell me about his faults. My father was so loving, so generous, so giving. He always wanted us to have the best, and he always cared for us, and he'd hug us or not hug us or whatever, whenever we came around and do these things. Well, that's not true. That's not true. Because the very things you talk about are the things you wished had happened. They didn't happen. And you say, oh, yes, they did. How often? Very seldom, if ever. And you built yourself a monument based upon the falseness. Okay, now, what do I say to you? I say, recreate your father, recreate your mother, recreate your life. And you say, well, that's what we're doing. No, you aren't. You're fighting against the a condition rather than building a new awareness. You're fighting against the fact that your father didn't hug you enough. You're fighting against the fact that your father didn't give you enough attention. You're fighting against the fact, because every time you say, my father was a loving father, you remember that he wasn't. You remember those times when he was tough and when he was hard to get along with. Now, you see, going at it from that point of view, we are destroying ourselves. That's an error. We want to go at it from the point of view of thinking, what kind of father did I have? Yeah, it's true, he didn't give me as much attention as I would have liked, but what kind of father did I have? And then you begin to recognize what kind of father you had, and then you start seeing him that way. And you start seeing in him all of these wondrous things that are about him that are so good and so much fun. And all of a sudden, he changes. He changes. He becomes a new mirror in your life. And who changed?
I.
No. You changed your attitude. You didn't change yourself. You've always been wonderful. You've always been good. You've always been beautiful. But you changed your life, you see? But you changed your thought. And this is what you want to do. So, I confidently admit my errors before someone else exaggerates them. And when I confidently admit my errors before someone exaggerates them, I am the master. And this is what we all want to learn how to do, because life is so wonderful when we're on top of it. Have a lovely day, and know that I love you, I love you, I love you.